Yes, this is an unfinished world. A world that is loved, a world that we love. And yet we also know it is a troubled world, and that there are areas and places and people who experience, for whatever reason, difficult times. I think we celebrate the fact that as a church, and we as the United Church, and the United Church of Canada as a whole, are proud of the bigger picture that the church takes and the way the church itself reaches out to other people and places and areas of need. We hear quite often about the work of the Mission and Service Fund that we as a church support, and we feel good to be part of something other and bigger than ourselves. We are fortunate to have within our congregation an active justice team, and our support of the justice team is a way also that we reach out to others in the search and work towards peace and justice. But sometimes we don't always acknowledge or realize the great work that individual people do in their lives as a way of living out their faith. Some people do it just by the way you live within family and community and church and whatever ways that you are involved in life. Other people, and some people, do both in the sense of participating in ways of being with organizations or the kinds of things that people will involve themselves in that work towards making the world a better place, even if it's only, or especially if it's on our own corner of the world. For what else can we be expected to do? So this morning, we are going to hear from a few of our folks who are involved in different ways in the community as an expression of their way of working towards a better world and bringing light to the world because of, or along with, a faith that they are trying to live out. And so we will hear from folks that are so involved. And as we begin, I want to light our first candle, the red candle, symbolic of passion and faith, a passion and faith that people live in the world. We remember the wonderful world we are able, the wonderful work that we are able to do together as a church, but today we take the light of love into the world where each of us as individuals live and work. So people will come forward to share a little bit about themselves and the organization that they are involved in. You can follow the order in the bulletin, or you can do your own thing. It's entirely up to you. Our first speaker.
Like Selma, I've got notes to keep myself short.
Gee, I was going to say, I don't have to have notes to keep myself short.
Immediately after graduating from high school, I did a 3-year program at a Bible college Right after that, I spent 2 months at the Montreal Olympics on an outreach, 1976 for those of you who are figuring, and graduated from high school in 1973. Now, I don't know where I fit on your timeline. Immediately after the Montreal Olympic outreach, for the next year and a half, I traveled full-time with a Christian youth band as the sound tech, doing presentations in churches and schools, working mostly with youth. So the seeds were sown for a life of ministry. I was active in my congregation for the next 23 years, waiting to see if and when God would send me back into a full-time ministry of some kind. Then in the year 2000, I felt it was time. I quit my job to do a 5-month training school with an organization called Youth with a Mission, and then became a full-time missionary with them, which is still my career slash job slash employment. I've done 3 short-term cross-cultural outreaches, but it fairly quickly became apparent that my mission, should I choose to accept it, was to work with folks on the margins of our own society, those in poverty, the homeless, those with various substance use or health challenges. The tent city about 13 years ago became my classroom as I met people who were just as interesting and deserving of love and attention as me. But they had been pushed almost off the edge of society because they had some serious challenges. After being a person of faith for half a century, I finally began to notice that Jesus had a lot to say and a lot of experience with serving those on the margins of his society. I quite quickly got involved with a local grassroots ministry called CARTS, which stands for Christian Actions Reflecting the Spirit, and also for the garden carts that we used to pull around the streets of downtown Victoria on Friday evening, loaded with food and clothing, bringing to people sleeping in doorways, parks, and shelters. This was where my heart belonged. These were my people. The volunteers were some of the kindest and lovingest people I have ever met. Things have been adjusted many times. Now we go out on Sunday afternoons, and the people come to us as we set up in an open courtyard downtown. But things like the love poured out never changes. So now I get to hang out and be a blessing and a source of encouragement to some of the finest people in the world, some of God's favorite people. I know God doesn't have favorites, but if she did, they would be those on the edges of society. God is a mama bear when it comes to her cubs. People on the margins of society have become my life. So you can sign up for my infrequent newsletter. You can help collect useful items for us to give away every week at CARTS. You can become one of my financial supporters as a missionary. Thank you.
We now light the orange candle, which represents the church on this day. We are reminded that it was the early orange light that shone on the first Easter day and revealed the empty tomb. Orange represents resurrection experiences made possible through our outreach as a congregation and as individuals, as we live and work to make the world a kinder place where human rights are respected.
I'm here this morning representing the Victoria Dandelion Society. The primary purpose of the Victoria Dandelion Society is to support our street family, one person at a time. Now, this was achieved by Reverend Al Tissick conducting early morning rounds on the streets of Victoria, usually starting about 5 a.m. So that's why I'm not surprised when I receive emails from him that he sends out like at 3 or 4 when he's on his way into town. But he goes around on the streets of Victoria providing hot coffee and cookies, offering socks, blankets, or even a sleeping bag if that is needed. In doing this, the primary reason is to determine if someone has a particular need to be addressed, you know, something to do with poverty, homelessness, hunger, loneliness, substance abuse, or ill health. In a recent report to the board, Reverend Dow summarized some of the services he provided in just a typical month. Performed 6 funerals, visited 14 people in the hospital, 2 in nursing homes, helped 1 person get off the street into a rooming house, provides financial assistance to people who need to get to the mainland or up island for family commitments or work. And a new project the society has taken on is transporting individuals from court or out of the jail if they are able to or willing to go to treatment centers. In the past, they were just given a bus ticket. They got to the Swartz Bay Terminal, and that was the last they were seen. But now we are able to take them directly to a treatment center to make sure they fulfill that commitment. And fortunately, we've received a grant from the Victoria Foundation to help fund that project. I was invited by Reverend Al Tissot to serve as the treasurer on the board when the society was first created in 2012. I had previously worked with him many years ago, I hate to say how many, when I was on the board of the Open Door. He happened to see me when I was visiting my nephew at the hospital one day, and he said, "I really think I have something that you could do for me." It's a very small operation, it won't take too much of your time. But I really admired the work that Reverend Al did, and all it is in my comfort zone to be on the streets at 5 o'clock in the morning. At least I'm able to use my sort of financial and administration skills to help him in the background. In terms of how this relates to my faith, is that the work of the Dandelion Society reminds me of the story of the Good Samaritan. When the priest and the Levites saw the injured man on the road, they passed him by, not wanting to get involved, being a little judgmental. When the Samaritan came by, he didn't say to himself, "It's probably a drug addict, maybe an alcoholic, why doesn't he just get a job?" He was non-judgmental, saw someone who was in need, and provided the care that he was able to offer at that time. That is the work of the Dandelion Society.
And now to light the yellow candle, yellow being the color of the sun. Yellow is a hopeful, cheery sign. Daffodils and forsythia, with their bright blossoms, are early signs of spring. May this candle remind us of the ways we can and do brighten the lives of others. We offer hope like the first blossoms of spring after a long, cold winter.
Forgive me for reading this, but my memory's not as good as it used to be. 8 million children will die this year from poverty. That's equivalent to the entire populations of Vancouver, Toronto, and Ottawa combined. After a mild heart attack last August, I found that statistic in a book that I'd already given to read while I was in the hospital. It hit me pretty hard. We can go to Mars, but we can't feed the poor. Jesus came to teach us how to experience God, and he gave us only one commandment: love one another as I have loved you. And love is not a feeling, it's a decision. I started the charity Madres de Nicaragua, Mothers of Nicaragua, to save the lives of poor children. We chose the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, 30% of the population in Nicaragua live in extreme poverty on less than a dollar a day. We work with an NGO, Bridges to Community, in one of the poorest areas of Nicaragua. And as Nicaragua is predominantly Catholic, we asked two nuns, Sister Frances and Sister Juanita, who live in a community called Oramacora, to select the poorest of the poor mothers. We have the mothers sign a declaration that they will use the money that we send them for clothing, food, and housing, and ensure that their children go to school every day. We are now supporting four families and six children. Can't find my place. Yes, we are now supporting four families and six children. They are children of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. They have a right to be here. We can't save 8 million children, but we can save a few. And we must try to save as many as we can. This effort has brought me closer to a God experience. We do have, we are asking for a monthly donation of $10, minimum donation of $10. $10 is not a lot of money to us in Canada, but to those mothers in Nicaragua, it is life-saving. How do you measure the worth of a child's life? How would it make you feel to know you have saved the life of a child, which is a God experience? We do have donors that are donating $20 and $50 a month, and several who have given a one-time yearly donation of over $100. We will be issuing charity tax receipts. We will also be issuing email newsletters to all the donors showing the progress of these children. I would also like to add that I was so impressed with the people on the justice team and their conscientious efforts to not sit back, but try at every opportunity to stand up for the rights of others and make a difference, that it inspired me to do my part. I will also be making a more detailed presentation on June the 9th Sunday in the family room in the back. Go have your coffee, bring your coffee up, and join me again. Thank you.
Green represents the color of life. The first shoot poking up out of the ground, the opening buds on the tree after a long winter, and the many shades of green of the forest are all symbols of life. We light this candle as we share the light of spirit with those around us.
Setting up appointments and referring clients to staff members. open door involved lots of interaction with everyone who came through the door. Eventually, when the circumstances led to my having to choose to give time to only one of these places, I opted to stay at the open door because I so appreciated the interaction I was having with so many different sorts of folks. Around this time, the open door and the upper room formed an alliance to create the Our Place Society, and the new building opened in 2008. Our Place houses a drop-in center, a health and hygiene center, serves meals, and provides interim housing for some of the community's most vulnerable citizens. Since its inception, Our Place has taken on many more projects and runs a number of different programs. I continue to be part of the drop-in center. I work in an office on the drop-in floor, and I'm also part of the spiritual care team. While in the office, I answer phone calls and take messages for both staff and family members. We don't call people clients. I hand out mail and simple health products, help people find phone numbers and addresses, oversee family phone calls, listen to individuals' concerns and wisdom, and almost always learn a whole lot. As a member of the spiritual care team, I drift around in the drop-in area and connect with people who have become my friends, and sometimes hear about individuals' personal struggles and anxieties. I call what I do at Our Place a ministry of presence. That means I focus on the moment as I spend time with the people I encounter there. Some of these people suffer from addictions. Some struggle with mental illness. Some are mentally handicapped. Some are very bright. Some are students in residential schools. Many have spent time in jail. They have much to teach me about courage and valor, about feeling overwhelmed and giving up, about caring for one another, and about the futility of fighting when anger takes over. I am not there to fix anyone. I cannot solve another person's problems. I am there to be a caring human being with people who are too often dismissed as being beyond hope. I rejoice when someone successfully works their way through circumstances that were holding them back. I grieve when one more relatively young friend dies. And in the midst of these two extremes, I believe we all benefit from the love and laughter we share with one another. So, in a nutshell, that is my outreach ministry. As I mentioned earlier, the Our Place Society is an ever-expanding enterprise. I have copies of the Society's latest newsletter that some of you might like to take a look at. There are many volunteer opportunities. This sheet tells you what some of them are at Our Place for those who feel called to this type of ministry. The Society's printed mission states, Our Place offers Greater Victoria's most vulnerable citizens a place to call their own, where we live, share, and grow together. It's a vision, nourishment, hope, and belonging for all. And its values, unconditional love, hope,
Margot. So the blue candle today represents the whole earth. As the light from this candle fills the room, we give thanks for those who are a source of light in this marvelous, unfinished world.
I was brought up in a family that was very involved with the church, and were also very politically and socially active. And I learned from my parents at an early age that the idea that we weren't put in this earth just to sit around and have a good time, that our role is to get out there and help make it a better place. And that feeling, I think, has been with me ever since I was a child. It manifested in different ways. In 1969, Rob and I, who had only been married for about a year, went off to Nigeria to work for 2 years with CUSO and teaching in Nigeria. And that really helped coalesce a concern that I had had before, which is the whole issue of inequity and disparity in our world, and why some countries are so poor and others are rich, and are those rich countries rich at the expense of those poor countries? And that's been with me and kind of enhanced as I've learned more and more about colonialism, about its effects, etc. So in 1988, when a couple of friends said, why don't we get together and start up a fair trade store? I was right there. I had seen women in Mexico when we traveled there bargaining with tourists and ending up having to sell their beautiful crafts for just about nothing. And I wanted to be part of the whole movement where people got fair pay for their work and fair working conditions, and that really in a nutshell is what fair trade is. So we started the Global Village Store. First we had to look around for a place, and we got a little place that was actually an old taxi stand behind the Sussex Hotel on Brown Street that we painted up, and it was $400 a month, and that was our first store for about 4 years. And we had to slowly get our producers lined up. We had a lot of help from what was then Self-Help Crafts, which became 10,000 Villages. They were able to help us with some crafts, and we got started. And so that has now gone on for, we're in our 31st year. We've moved from our little taxi stand to Market Square, and some of you may have visited us down Pandora Street, stretching through now to Market Square. It's a wonderful feeling to work with a group of people and feel you're all working towards the same kind of solution, and that although there are many problems in the world, you're managing to work on one little piece of it and helping these producers in so many countries find a market for their work and receive enough money to help them live lives of dignity. So it's funny how one thing can lead to another in life. And because I was working at Global Village Store, I got to know a remarkable woman, Jacqueline Mealing, who lived in Castlegar, and she would go down to Guatemala every year and buy up handicrafts from different poor little co-ops and different groups, and she brought them back up to Canada, and we bought some of these from her. And so I introduced her to a friend of mine, Mary, who wanted to go and visit Guatemala. And this led to, in 2007, my friend Mary saying, why don't a group of us go down Rob and I and Mary and two other friends went down to San Antonio and did a whole variety of things down there. One of the things Jacqueline was doing at that point was trying to raise money to replace these smoky little fires that people cooked on in their unventilated houses, to replace these with clean burning stoves that would take less wood and so reduce deforestation and really impact on the health of Mayan families. While I was there, I learned more about the Mayan people. These are the indigenous people of Central America. They form half of the population of Guatemala, and they have been oppressed beyond measure, but they still, many of them have kept their language and their dress, and but they have huge odds to overcome, lack of education, poverty, etc. Much like some of the issues faced by the indigenous people in our country. From that little group of us working, three of us are still in that group, working away in this little community, and a couple of people have joined us. And the project has grown, working with local community leaders and finding out what is needed. We now have a little community center that is a learning center for many of the children who have so many problems learning at school because their parents are illiterate. They can't help them with their homework. They go to school on a shift system. So there's a morning school and an afternoon school, and the teachers have no time to help students who are having trouble. And there are essentially no books in this community. It's really, for us who are so used to having libraries and being able to read and everything, it's really an experience to be in a little village with no books. And so we started a library, a learning center, we have a feeding program for elderly poor women, and who come for lunch and social time, and various programs, literacy programs for women, and an entrepreneurship program for young adults. So it's very exciting what's going on. And I was able to go down in January and February. We're an all-volunteer. We got to be part of a larger umbrella organization so that we could give tax receipts. So Innovative Communities, we're the kind of Guatemala branch of that organization. And it's an all-volunteer organization, so we pay all our own way when we go down, etc. So just to be there and to see everything working, we have a wonderful administrator now who, our group in Victoria can mainly just raise funds and support the project now and go once in a while to see how things are going. But you know, I was just struck with gratitude for this whole experience. And I think many of us who do this kind of work experience this too, that, you know, we go with our little tray of loaves and fishes and offer what we have, and we get so much back in the way of learning and understanding and satisfaction that we're doing something in this world, and friendships, and just inspiration from the people that we work with. Thanks. Through our involvement, we bring joy to the oppressed, care for the afflicted, and offer hope to a hurting world. So we light the purple candle, again, sharing the light of spirit in this place, in this community, and in the world.
A lot of that.
We give God thanks.
You want to go?
For church, for faith, for people who are so involved to bring
the light of life, love, and hope to people, to world. Thanks be to God. I invite you to turn to hymn number 598, When Pain of the World. As the hymn is concluding, we're only going to have a very brief time, but as the hymn is concluding, the people who have shared their experiences and involvements are going to go over to these tables, and you are invited to visit them at the table, speak with them if you wish, if they have things you see or can't, you can help yourself. As I said, the time is going to be brief, but I call you back for the conclusion of the service. When Pain of the World, 598 in Voices United.